You're listening to Eye on the Ball with Steve Rivera. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Eye on the Ball. I'm Steve Rivera with Jay Gonzalez, and you're listening to 1030 The Voice. Good afternoon, Jay. So let me ask you a quick question. I don't know if this applies to what we're going to talk about, but when was the last time you reached into your pocket and say, hey, this is a winning ticket for Vegas?
It's been a while. Last time I was there for any amount of time, I didn't do so well doing the football game. So it's been quite a while.
But crazy things are happening in Vegas.
Well, you know, this is under one of those things that this never happens to me. You know, I guess it was a baseball game, a Korean baseball game that was on the board to bet. It had already started. In fact, it was halfway through, and people were still making bets on it, and people were winning because people were betting on the underdog in the game, and they were winning 10-2, and also the over-under on the game was 10, something like that, and that got crushed. So people were still betting on the game. Apparently, it cost the Bellagio $250,000.
Yeah. I was surprised that I saw that. I was surprised that it happens, or it has happened frequently enough for Vegas, because Vegas doesn't screw up.
They don't. And again, it's never happened to me. You know, I've been trying to get to the window, and a game starts, and I can't get my bet down.
So. Right.
But that was, I'm like, dang, I wish I could have been there for that.
I never would have guessed that that happens.
Well,
they talked about human error. Sometimes they don't pay it out either, but they paid out because if you're a guest and all this,
right?
They save face.
And now's the time. Okay, you know the thing you do that $250,000 to the Bellagio. What's that? You know,
$10 to you and me.
You know, they find that under the mattress, right? So, That's a good one. That's a lot of stories. I've got a lot of stories about Vegas, but never anything like that.
Yeah, no, that would be huge, good fortune. And it seems like you'd have to be paying attention. Oh, look, no, it's the game is still bad.
Yeah, the game is still on the board. Go see if you can bet it.
Right. I got $10 in my pocket.
God dang. I don't know, man. I don't know. I'd love to have been there for that one.
So this weekend, we'll talk a little about Vegas anyway, but Bob Baffert, who we thought would have or would not have a horse in the Derby because he's kind of still being scrutinized for his negative tests for a couple of his good, very good horses.
Right.
There's one called Uncle Chuck, who won this weekend going away at Los Alamitos in the Los Alamitos Derby, who has local connections, local owners, who may be good enough to run in the Derby, which would be a dream for people.
Well, sure, and you know where we'll be on that one, right?
Yes,
if the Derby's
no
running
question.
And there's a Tucson horse in it,
and he won't be the favorite, so we might have some make some money.
Yeah, you know, the chalk comes in so often that it's hard to win money on a race like the Derby, but that would be fun.
Yeah, so it's in the real world, it already happened a couple months ago. So this is like the bet. Now we get September 5th, I think it is.
Exactly.
Labor Day weekend.
We'll keep an eye on that one.
Have you heard anything about UA football or anything like that? I know that we're still kind of...
Everything's just kind of where it is, but I did see that they got a running back out of Louisiana that committed.
He's doing okay.
Sumlin and his crew have certainly stepped it up. I mean, there was that period of time where people were really down on him because they were the only team in the league that didn't have a commitment, and all of a sudden they've got a whole bunch of them, and they've got some good players, and they're kind of in the middle of the pack in the Pac-12 in the recruiting rankings. They're in the middle of the pack nationally, so you know, it's stepping up a little bit. You know, now let's see if we can have some football.
Right. Speaking of football, we had John Wilner on the show last week, had some fun with him and some of the decisions that will be made or not be made. He's less optimistic that there'll be a season, but he did, if he played commissioner for a day, and tell me, he had some good ideas.
Right, he did. Well, first of all, John apparently has way too much time on his hands because he has time to think about these things. And there's a lot of plans about how they're going to get college football done that are rolling around out there. One that I heard was the 9+1 plan, where you play your 9 conference games and play one team from either a mid-major or an FCS team in your region, somebody that can bust to your game, that you can be in control of their testing, that the Power 5 team would actually pay for their testing to help them, you know, with the finances of it. And so that plan is out there. But John came up with a very interesting plan where in his column that he talked about this, he said, forget the non-conference games. They're not happening.
Yeah, and we've said that.
We've been starting to say that. I think we got to that point last week, and when we had him on, he pretty much said that forget the non-conference games. They're not happening. They're too soon. And then the testing thing and the different standards with the different schools and conferences and parts of the country and whatnot, it just makes it too complicated, and so that's unlikely. So item one from his plan was that forget the non-conference games. And then he suggested an eight-game plan, eight games within your conference, and they would have to work this out with the TV schedules and stuff like that, but that teams would play two, be off a week, play two, be off a week, and use those weeks and fill in with games that maybe get postponed or a team can't go because of the COVID or something, so that there'll always be games for television during those weeks. Mm-hmm. And then the way that schedule would roll out, so you play two, start mid to late September, play two off a week, play two off a week until you get your eight games. The last off week would be the week that those conference championship games are supposed to be played. Mm-hmm. Then you play your conference championship games the second weekend in December. And now you've got eight games. You've got room to maneuver if games get postponed, if teams can't travel because of COVID or whatever. And it gives a lot of flexibility, plus it gives you a later start date. It sounds like a great plan to me. You know what? If they said right now that's what we're doing and that's the best we're going to do, I would take it.
I think it's a good plan. It would take you into December, later in December, 2 weeks. So you'd Stanford would be your first game, middle of September.
Right.
And right away, a loss.
Well, stop it. They're going to win that one. Okay. Well, in the Pac-12, what he suggested was you still play your five non-conference game, your five division games. Mm-hmm. And then instead of four non-division games, you only play three. So you're still playing, you know, with all the teams within your division, and then you have three teams outside of your division.
Right, right.
It sounds like a great plan to me. I like it. And like I said, if they say that's what it is, that's the best we're going to do, let's just lock it in right now, and that's going to happen, I'm all over that.
And at the end of the day, you know how good you are against your conference. You know, more than half the time, you're going to have a non-conference game and you're going to win that game.
Well, remember, in the Pac-12, all you got to do is win your division, mm-hmm. and you're in the conference championship game, and you got a chance to go to the Rose Bowl. So if you play all your division games, then you got a chance.
Here's your chance, Jay. Here's your chance to get to L.A.
Well, you know, if you Arizona's got to play Oregon. So if, let's say, we pitch the Oregon game, now I'm thinking Arizona could go, you know, 4-4, 5-3, oh. You know, in an all league schedule like that.
Help me! I just fell off my chair. I got to get up. Hold on, give me a sec. Hey, in a minute or so, we're going to go talk to Greg Smith, a big time soccer guy, a national guy who's coming to town in late October, November with a big tournament here. Should be interesting. One of the quick questions we have to ask him: what do you think the chances are you're going to be here?
Exactly. You know, I mean, you know, we've had things like the Fort Lowell Shootout, the Pima Cup, with mm-hmm. where soccer teams come from all over the country to play. This is kind of like that. It's in late October. It seems to me kind of on the borderline, but you right. know, but if they're playing football, then why couldn't you be playing youth soccer?
I was talking to somebody this week and we were talking about that. If teams play football, everybody else is going to follow suit. Yeah.
I'm in. Yeah. I'm in.
Let's take a break here. Talk to Greg Smith on the other side. Thank you.
It's those guys from Tucson Appliance Company, the best appliance company in Tucson.
For the month of July, we're going to donate 2% of our sales to a local charity from in-stock purchases.
Come shop at our store and work with our amazing sales team.
Dustin, David, Brian, Alex, May, and Peter.
You can choose from a list of local charities for us to donate to.
The only way we can give back is if you shop local.
Only at Tucson Appliance, where our low price is your priority.
These days, most families are concerned with having the right insurance coverage. Protecting your family, home, auto, and other valuable possessions can be challenging and sometimes expensive. Crest Insurance gives you flexible options and solutions while saving you money. Insurance is not one size fits all, and at Crest, we find the coverage that's best for you and your family. Visit us online at www.crestins.com or call us toll free at 888-881-5765.
There's a place in our house.
For 70 years, Benjamin Supply has been keeping Tucson flowing. Hygiene is our business. We help you achieve extreme clean. Minimize germ spreading with a hands-free sensor faucet. Forget the paper panic with a washlet seat. And speaking of waterworks, a big thanks to plumbers for their essential efforts during this health crisis. Shop our downtown showroom by appointment. Call us at 777-7000 or see all the products online at BenjaminSupply.com.
Thanks to Benjamin Plumbing Supply.
Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera alongside co-host Jay Gonzalez. And now on the phone we have Mr. Greg Smith of the Elite One Cup. Greg, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me on.
Great to have you. You have an ambitious thing in your pocket, and you'll be here in October, November, bringing it along to showcase some of the best kid soccer in the world. Yes?
Yes, that's true. So we will be bringing the Elite One Cup, which is a brand new offering in the youth soccer landscape. And what we have done is we've created the first opportunity for all teams, regardless of the registration providers, to be able to come together and compete in one tournament to be crowned youth soccer's one true national champion.
How did you create this? Because everybody wants to be that, everyone has a better mousetrap. This sounds like a lot of fun, a lot of work.
It's true that it is definitely a lot of work, but anything worth doing, I suppose, takes a lot of work. I have been very fortunate through my career to have worked with a lot of really great people and really great organizations. And through those experiences, I've been able to identify some areas that could really use a bit of improving. And so, again, this is really what has birthed this company, Elite One, which is a social change company that truly embraces a unified youth soccer community that is committed to working together to best grow and improve participation. Most of the groups that currently exist in the landscape are membership organizations. And as a direct result of being a membership organization, it limits this potential to actually work together and to allow other teams comprised of players from other groups to actually engage in these sort of open competitions, if you will.
So, Greg, explain a little bit then how, you know, specifically, how does this work? How does somebody bring their team to this tournament? What are you looking for? I saw that there's an application process. Talk to us a little bit about exactly how's this going to work when teams begin to apply to play in this tournament.
Exactly. So anyone that's authorized to apply on behalf of the team, so whether it's a club leader or the coach or a team manager for the team, they can simply visit EliteOneCup.com, and it takes about 2 minutes to apply. Once they apply, the Elite One Cup selection committee will review all of the applications, and they will make the decision as far as which teams are selected. In total, maximum capacity for the Elite One Cup for this coming competition year, only 64 teams in each age and gender will ultimately be selected. So it will be a high-level, highly competitive situation for all of those teams that come. But the benefit of that for the teams is not only that it's a high level of competition, it also makes sure that there's not a lot of games that maybe are not the best fit for all of the teams. It keeps the competitions very streamlined and efficient as far as the city qualifiers only taking place over a 3-day weekend as opposed to a 6 or 7-day event in other models. And again, it creates a really great opportunity for teams to play against other teams that they may have not been able to come up against or to meet in the current landscape as it is today.
I had a question. I've been in the soccer community for almost 20 years now. My kids played a lot. Why Tucson? Because it is a soccer community?
Absolutely. When we started reaching out to facilities all across the country, we spoke with more than 30 and ultimately selected 8 to hold city qualifiers. Tucson stuck out not only because of the incredible facility that you have there in the Keno Sports Complex and the fantastic people that work within Visit Tucson. I'm thinking of Lucy and Nick, which have made it so nice to work with, your geographic location as well. And yes, truly the community and how much desire and compassion there is for the beautiful game there locally.
So the one thing that I have a question, there's a couple quick things, but Jay wants to ask a question as well. What prevents a team or what will prevent you guys, let's say Jay and I comprise an all-star team. It's not the team that we coach, but he coaches a team, I coach a team, and he says, hey, Jay, let's get together here and get 13 really good dudes, play on a team and crush this. Is that possible?
The way that it currently works through the selection process is that as that team applies, they put their roster into the system, and the analysis that is done, the analytics, look at the last 12 months for that team. So the ability to put in a team roster of individuals that have not played together, the likelihood of them actually being able to be selected to play in this event is very, very low.
Smart.
Yeah, very smart, and because you know you hate the old sandbagging thing that unfortunately you know there are parents and teams out there that try to do so when this comes to town, you know, what's it going to look like? How many teams are we going to see in Tucson in October? And you know, where are they going to come from? Because I believe this is sort of a regional thing, correct?
It's actually not solely based on geography, which is another improvement over some of the other offerings in the landscape today. It's more so based on giving all of the teams who are accepted the greatest opportunity to advance so that ultimately at the national championship, you will have the top of the top teams. So, for example, in some of the other models in the landscape today, if you come from a state or a geography like a region where there's a lot of really good talent, while your team may be the second or third best team in the entire country, because you come from a specific state or geography where the other two best teams in the country happen to exist in your age and gender, you may never advance out of your state or out of your geography, which is truly unfortunate. So what we have done is through this application process, through the selection committee determining which teams are in, they will also be seeding those teams. So while some consideration will be made for geography, we would hate for a team from Tucson to need to go play in Commerce City, Colorado, or Arbondale, Florida, for example. It's not solely based on geography. So the teams coming to Tucson could be coming from anywhere all across the country for that opportunity to compete to advance that national championship.
I think you had something scheduled for June, correct?
So the national championship will be held in July in Overland Park, Kansas, and we do have city qualifiers all through the spring, beginning early to mid-May and ending early June.
Okay, so, but this one's in October, November. I was wondering, can teams, and you guys will be the gatekeepers, can teams go to Florida, and if they don't qualify there, go somewhere else to try to qualify?
At this time, no. At this time, the competition rules state that a team can only play in one qualifier during that competition year. And again, that's because of the total model and how it's put together, where the teams are selected, seeded, and then placed into that city qualifier.
So, have you been getting response to this? What kind of momentum is this thing generating?
It's been an overwhelming response, so positive. We have found we launched officially 2 weeks ago, and we have had so many people come out with the mission of this embracing a truly unified community really resonates with them. We announced today proudly our first national sponsor who, again, wants to align and wants to be part of this advancement, this evolution in the landscape, this idea of we are all truly one soccer community, and the more that we can operate as such, it really is going to be in the best interest of all.
Now the million-dollar question, and these days a million doesn't go very far, so I'll make it a $10 million question. The likely chance that you'll be doing this given the COVID-19 situation?
Yeah, we are. It's a very unfortunate situation, and we absolutely are staying abreast of all the developments. It seems every day there are new advancements, new developments taking place. For us, safety is absolutely the top priority. There's no question about it. We are fortunate to have partnered with a fantastic group called Premier Sports Medicine, who takes care of all of our health and safety aspects, as well as welcoming a director of sports medicine to the Elite One Cup team. And we are making sure that every policy, every protocol, all restrictions are being followed to make sure that all participants are as safe as possible. And because we don't know if an event might not be able to be held due to a specific regulation or the situation locally, we have also built in an added protection where all accepted teams to play in the Elite One Cup, in the event that the event is canceled, not only will we work with them to reschedule them for another qualifier, if that doesn't work, we're able to refund them their money, which is something which is necessary, and it's something you really don't find elsewhere in the landscape.
Well, unfortunately, that's just one of those things that you just have to do right now, and so I think that'll certainly help you. So, I think we're looking forward to having a large group like that. I mean, there's so much that's just been put on hold to have a chance to have a tournament like that here in Tucson. How did you hook up with Tucson on this? We've only got about a minute or so, but I know Visit Tucson got involved with this. So, did they find you? Did you find us? How did that happen?
So it was Elite One Cup reaching out, and I believe Rainey with the Keno Sports Complex and Lucy and Nick with Visit Tucson, they identified the potential and the opportunity, and they were fantastic to work with, and we were able to put in place a great partnership to be able to bring this event to maximize that benefit for all participants and for the local community. We remain optimistic that the event will go on as scheduled, and as such, we anticipate it bringing upwards to $7 million of economic impact for your local community, and we couldn't be more proud of that.
Well, that's certainly something that everybody here would be welcoming, and hopefully we can pull ourselves together here in Arizona to allow that
to celebrate. To
We're not doing so well right now, but we're hoping to turn the corner, and we can get you guys here in October, so that would be great.
Just one quick 10-second question. So how many teams are you expecting here?
112 teams. That would be 56 in Division I, 56 Division II. That's spread between the U13 to U19. 4 teams in each age gender division.
We'll make the red carpet available when we can. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you both so much.
Greg, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it.
Let's take a quick break here on 1030 Voice. Come back.
Camille Rivas Rutherford with Coldwell Banker Realty has been one of the top producing real estate agents in Tucson, Oro Valley, Marana, and Vail for more than 20 years. Let her help you find your dream home in southern Arizona. Her passion and enthusiasm for real estate has helped her become one of the most respected and trusted realtors in the area. And she was recently named a recipient of Coldwell Banker's 2019 International President Circle Award. Camille's approach to sales and marketing and selling or buying a home is second to none. Give her a call at 520-250-5192.
Time to update those old kitchen cabinets? Call the Window Depot today. The Window Depot is not only the number one warehouse for windows and doors, we now have a great selection of kitchen and bath cabinets at Tucson's best prices. The Window Depot is Tucson's top spot for granite and quartz countertops to finish the new kitchen or the replacement of that old worn out Formica. So call us today at 290-8545 or 622-6430. The Window Depot, windows, doors, granite, and new kitchens.
Where you bank really does matter. Hughes Federal Credit Union is proud to be recognized by Forbes as one of Arizona's best credit unions 3 years in a row. This national recognition highlights our commitment to high-quality products and services, our customer service, digital services, and financial advice. At Hughes Federal Credit Union, we offer low rates on loans, lower fees, and many free services. Make the switch. Join Hughes today. Visit hughesfcu.org/best. Certain restrictions apply. Insured by NCUA.
Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera alongside co-host Jay Gonzalez. So hypothetical, if we ever, I don't really hate to live in the hypothetical world, but it's fun to live there. So tell me about this hypothetical contest or whatever. The Wildcaster.
Oh, well, the Wildcaster put up a what is the biggest what if in Arizona sports history?
So that's
today.
A hypothetical, I think. What if?
It's a what if.
Let me give you an odd one. Well, go ahead. You tell me your two.
Okay. Obviously mine are going to revolve around getting to the Rose Bowl.
Oh,
Arizona getting to the Rose Bowl, right? And when they said Arizona, I think in Tucson, we assume University of Arizona as opposed to Arizona, the state, because some people started posting stuff about the Suns. I immediately posted two. Well, actually, I posted one, and then I posted a second one as a reply to one that had already been stated. And my first one and the one that came to mind was in Arizona, in 1993, that 1993 season where Arizona went to the Fiesta Bowl and beat Miami. That year, they lost a game at Cal where they blew a 20-point halftime lead.
Right, we've talked about that game, huh?
Right. Had they won that game, they would have gone to the Rose Bowl that year. Now, they still would have had to beat ASU the next week, and who knows what would have happened had they beaten Cal. But the fact of the matter is they win that game, and all other things stay the same, and they're in the Rose Bowl back in 1993.
Uh-huh.
And so that was my first one, and that's the one that sticks in my brain. I went to that game. We were there for that game. We were shell-shocked. We were stuck in San Francisco that night and so disappointed. And we were as Arizona fans, we were a mess. And that's the one that sticks in my brain. But the other one that sticks out goes to the 98 season where the Cats went 12-1 and still wasn't good enough to go to the Rose Bowl because they lost to UCLA. But if you recall, in that year, UCLA had a game against Miami and was scheduled for September. And they didn't play it because of a potential hurricane that ultimately did materialize, but UCLA didn't go. They ended up playing Miami at the end of the season, went to Miami, blew a big lead, lost the game. Had UCLA won that game, they would have been in the national championship game. That would have been the first year of the BCS. They would have been in the national championship, and Arizona, as a second place team in the Pac-12 or Pac-10, would have gone to the Rose Bowl.
You're doomed. You're cursed.
We are absolutely cursed.
Yeah. So, what do you think? It happened a long time ago. You know that.
That was a long time ago, but you know, to me, that was yesterday.
No, not the 90. I'm talking about the curse.
The curse goes way back. The curse goes way back. And I don't know if there's a goat somewhere.
There's
the Cubs goat, or you know, the trading or selling Babe Ruth to to the Yankees. Where it is that Arizona has that? Did you know?
There's no question.
Did Button Salmon do something
there's
that we
no
don't
questions.
Know about?
You know, there's something. Right? I was reading the book. They fought like Wildcats a number of years ago. I can't even find the book anymore. But I was reading and I'm thinking, this team is cursed. It's cursed from like the 40s or 50s, whatever it was.
Whenever it was. And if something bad can happen, something bad will happen. We are where we are. But, you know, there was that Miami game. So UCLA blows that game. Somebody had already posted that, Blair Willis, who used to work at the U of A, mentioned that as what if you could change one thing, and that was that one. And mine was a little what if within that. If towards the end of that game, UCLA was trying to run out the clock, Cade McNown fumbles. When they showed the instant replay, his knee was already on the ground when the ball came out, but of course they were at Miami. They called it a fumble. Miami recovered, went down, scored the winning touchdown.
Right. Anybody wants to call in, please do. We like the calls and your observations.
We would love to hear your what if. So there's that. A lot of conversation on that was the Duke National Championship game in 2001, Gilbert Arenas being hurt, the foul they didn't call when Jay Williams jumped on Jason Gardner's back.
A whole
bunch of things
Let me throw an odd one. And if 790-2040 is the number. Okay, so what if Steve Kerr had not gotten his knee or suffered the knee injury in 86?
Right.
The 88 would have been
Happened, right? Because he would have played in 87.
Right, his senior year.
That would have been his senior year. Sean Elliott would have been a freshman, so he wouldn't have had that one extra extra year. Well, all those guys wouldn't have had the one extra year. So, yeah, that changes that one a lot. And who knows what happens to Arizona basketball after that. If, you know, if they have a good season but not a great season, maybe they don't go to the Final Four. And then Kerr is gone. And I'm telling you, if Kerr's not on that 88 team, they're not going to the Final Four.
No.
And with all due respect to Kenny Lofton, who is a very good point guard and, you know, incredibly athletic and exciting to watch, you know, he was not a floor general the way Steve Kerr was.
No, and Steve had that presence about him to keep everybody loose and happy.
And he was the one guy that, you know, he was a T.J. McConnell times 10.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, he was in charge of that team.
Yeah.
And there was no doubt about it. If you traveled with the team and you interacted with the team, you saw that Steve Kerr was in charge of that team. Sean Alley was not in charge of that team.
No.
Steve Kerr was in charge of that team. He and Craig McMillan really were. Craig McMillan being as quiet as he was yet, you know, he and Steve Kerr kind of ran that team.
In fact, part of one of my books, Harvey Mason said one of the guys that impacted him the most was Steve Kerr because he didn't want to disappoint Steve Kerr.
And that's an interesting thing to hear because Harvey Mason was, you know,
very good.
That period of time is five-star recruit.
Mm-hmm.
And for somebody like Harvey Mason to say that he respected Steve Kerr enough to say that about him certainly says a lot about, again, Kerr's leadership on that team and how that team got to where it got to.
Yeah. Let me ask a weird question because it just reminds me of Lute. You had to deal with Lute in 88, not as a beat guy, but
I was the beat guy.
Okay, so obviously this regal, tall and regal guy, good-looking guy who commanded respect. How was it? Because this was the time of Arizona's life.
Right.
And we had access. You had access. I wasn't covering the team then, but it was a glorious time.
Well, he was easy to work with because they were really good. And they were winning a lot. So, you know, I had some tough times with Lute when times weren't so great. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of reporters did. And that's fine. I'm not criticizing Lute about that. And, you know, any coach, you have tough times with them when things aren't going so well. That was easy. What made that covering that team hard was that you had to write every single day.
Right.
And sometimes you had to write two or three stories a day because that's what the readers want.
Right, right. So, that's when it all started.
Right. And that we worked our butts off
mm-hmm.
to give the fans what they wanted. You know, I remember the Fiestabowl basketball tournament came around.
Mm-hmm.
That was a tournament that brought Duke, Michigan State, and Florida here. When that tournament was a real, and believe it or not, none of those games were on national television.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, covering that, the week of covering that was crazy because you were writing a story about every team, you were writing the game stories, you were writing mm-hmm. in between the days. It was nuts that you had that amount of stuff that you had to write because you knew it was being read and people were buying the newspaper for that.
Having been in it, I understand completely. And it had to be one good and it had to be fresh.
It did. You did have to do something fresh. And, you know, we ran through every single player on the team and did features on all of them. We even did features on Sean Rooks and Mark Georgeson, who didn't even play.
Yeah.
They were redshirts.
Well, the original Gumbies,
yeah,
too.
The original. I had to do features on them. I had to do a feature on Bruce Frazier. I had to do features on, Bruce was the year before. My bad. It was
Georgeson.
Why am I not remembering? But we had to do features on everybody.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Every guy on the team.
Heck.
You know, Judd Bushler, Harvey Mason. Every guy got his story. Joe Turner was a senior that year. Craig McMillan to do the Craig McMillan story when we went to the Bay Area, went to play Stanford and Cal. I had to go. I drove to Craig McMillan's hometown. And went to his high school, interviewed some of his teachers. I had them I had to go to this. It was one of my strangest things, and I ever had to do. They said, you know, who's somebody in town who's just a friend of his, a friend of his family, and they sent me to this, a saw store, a store that did chainsaws and saw blades. And, you know, you drove up and it had a big giant saw blade on the front of it. I mean, you want to talk about small town America.
Yeah.
And I walked into the store and the first guy I saw was missing a leg. And I thought, oh my God, you know, here's a guy who's in the saw business. And in fact, he's so dedicated to it, he's lost his leg and he's still in the saw business. And he was a guy that I talked to and he told me a bunch of great stories about But Craig growing
up. We got to have him on the show. Craig's been a regular guest on the show. It'd be good to talk.
But that was in Northern California.
California.
Right. It was a very fun trip. I walked into the gym and in Craig's jersey and the quarterback.
On the thing.
Yeah, he was a quarterback, but he also played as a walk-on for the basketball team. Why can't I remember his name?
Because you're older, like me.
Craig Bergman.
Craig Bergman.
Both of their jerseys, Craig's basketball jersey and Craig Bergman's jersey.
And he played on the team.
They were both went to the same high school, and they were both hung up in the gym.
And Bergman played here for a cup of coffee.
Yeah, he played for Dick Tomey.
Well, it's funny because you have to come up with these stories. We got to take a break, but it's not about the kids too. It's about their parents. As the stories you have to chase down or
right.
do to make it fresh, parents, where they're coming from, blah, blah, blah.
Right. Yeah. It was funny. It was funny to get that background.
It was a lot of fun back then,
It was
too.
A lot of fun to do that.
A lot of work, but a lot of fun.
Exactly.
Hey, let's take a quick break here, talk more about, reminisce about the good old days here on 1030 The Voice.
It's those guys from Tucson Appliance Company, the best appliance company in Tucson.
For the month of July, we're going to donate 2% of our sales to a local charity from in-stock purchases.
Come shop at our store and work with our amazing sales team.
Dustin, David, Brian, Alex, me, and Peter.
You can choose from a list of local charities for us to donate to.
The only way we can give back is if you shop local.
Only at Tucson Appliance, where our low price is your priority.
There's a place in our house.
For 70 years, Benjamin Supply has been keeping Tucson flowing. Hygiene is our business. We help you achieve extreme clean. Minimize germ spreading with a hands-free sensor faucet. Forget the paper panic with a washlet seat. And speaking of waterworks, a big thanks to plumbers for their essential efforts during this health crisis. Shop our downtown showroom by appointment. Call us at 777-7000 or see all the products online at BenjaminSupply.com.
Thanks to Benjamin Plumbing Supply.
Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera alongside Jay Gonzalez talking about what ifs in sports history, U of A involved. Another one, what if Steve Kerr doesn't go 2-for-13 against Oklahoma?
You know, he's thinking about that one all the time.
And
you know,
we talked about it.
He said so. What if he makes three?
Yeah.
If he makes three of those, you know, they probably win that game.
Same game.
Win the national championship.
What if Salim Stoudemire doesn't go 2-for-13 against Illinois?
Right. So there's, you know, a lot of the what ifs on this, and this was a fun thread. I followed it all day. Most of them were around basketball, Arizona basketball, and most of them were around Arizona basketball in the Lute Olson era. Nothing went beyond that.
I'll give you one. Go ahead. I'll give you one more in the Sean Miller time. What if Nick Johnson, who we've had on the show, that shot against Wisconsin falls?
Or the other one is what if the Jamal Horn three-pointer against Connecticut?
Don't you think
falls?
Sean Miller's trajectory is totally different.
It's completely different. Honestly, he might not even be here.
Oh, good point.
He might not even be here. He could be any one of a number of places, but maybe he would be. Maybe it would be good enough. You know, maybe he wins a national championship and he stays because Tucson is the place to be. But so many things change on a bunch of those. Ramon on the thread said, what if Brandon Ashley's injury? Salim takes a final shot, I'm assuming against
Illinois.
Against Illinois. Yeah. The officiating in the 2001 national championship game, Jamal Horn's three, he did some other Phoenix Sun stuff that I don't even pay attention to. So, but there were a whole laundry list, and then one of them threw out, "What if Luke goes to Kentucky?"
Oh yeah,
one of the two times that he flirted with them. That ends
the whole thing.
It's all different. It's all different. Right. This town is different.
What about the kid? We talked about this a while back, maybe a week or so ago. What if the kid Zendejas, I think it was against ASU,
right?
He missed the extra points. He missed the field goals. Remember in overtime or whatever
right.
it was.
He had two extra points blocked.
What if that whole taste?
Right. If Arizona wins those two games, Mike Stoops could still be here.
Right.
Because that was the beginning of the end for him. Because he was gone by the middle of the 2011 season.
Mm-hmm.
So you know he could, you know, Mike Stoops might still be here, and then we never would have had Rich Rod. Who knows what happens there?
Sure.
But again, all these what ifs, and for Arizona, there's a ton of them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a ton of them.
What's the best game? What's the best game you covered at the U of A college game?
And that you college just game that it just
pops into your mind.
That sticks into my mind. You know, I have to go to the game that put Arizona in the Final Four, the North Carolina game.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
that
yeah.
was so unexpected.
Sure, and the way they did it.
Because it was still, going to that, and I think we talked about this once, maybe not, but, you know, even going into that tournament, I knew they weren't going to lose to Cornell in the first game.
Kicked the crap out of them.
But I thought, they could all come to an end every game after that. I thought, you know, Seton Hall, you know, this is Big East. Arizona's, you know, still has the soft reputation. They beat them by 20.
Yeah.
And then they played Iowa, you know, in the Sweet 16 and crushed their skulls.
Right.
And I thought, you know, Iowa could beat them because Iowa, you know, had beat them the year before. And then this was North Carolina. This was Dean Smith.
Right.
This was all those guys. And I'm like, this is Arizona. You know,
they haven't proven yet.
Let's remember, Arizona was not Arizona yet.
Sure.
You know, what we think, what we've come to think about Arizona basketball, they were not Arizona yet. But they became Arizona that day.
No question.
In that game.
No question.
And to me, that's the one that sticks out because that made all the other things that have happened since then possible, not only from a basketball standpoint, but in large part from a football standpoint.
Right, right. I'll give you another what if. What if a charge was called in the Vegas game against Kenny Lofton?
Oh, yeah. Because again, I think Arizona was ranked number one that game.
I think
the entire country thought they were the best team in the country.
Yeah.
I thought they were a little flawed at point guard because it was Kenny Lofton and Matt Muehlbach was a freshman, sophomore, and hadn't played a whole hell of a lot because they didn't have the shooter. They didn't have the shooter that the team had the year before. But Sean Elliott was so much better, and Anthony Cook was so much better, and that team was really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
But as they were losing that game, that game was unfolding, you know, Greg Hansen and I, you know, were sitting with each other. We were like, they could lose this game, and then they did.
Yeah.
They did.
Okay, best football game. I have mine. Best basketball game, probably the national championship. There's been a few of them, but football game.
Best football game in person. That I went to in person or
yes,
that I covered?
That you covered in person.
That I covered.
I'm going to throw a game that I think we covered at the same time.
Ooh. Well, you know.
Well, you talked about it because our guest tomorrow. We can talk about our guest tomorrow.
There was the Washington game at Washington in 1988, where our guest tomorrow, Doug Pfaff, had a game-winning kick at Washington. Which, again, growing up watching Washington and understanding who Washington was, that was great. There was the next year the Oklahoma game, which was here, which was a great game from the standpoint of what it meant, and it was a top 10 team. But that was really an awful game because it was a 6-3 game.
And it was the first year of their coach. I can't remember his name because what's his name had left to Dallas.
Right. The coach was, I can't remember his name.
But we had been covering the team the year before in Oklahoma.
We were at Oklahoma. And Barry Switzer had retired after that year. And his offensive coordinator became the head coach the next year. Mm-hmm. Here's one that kind of sticks, that's out there that people don't talk about a lot. But the year before in 85, and I actually did this as a freelancer, when Arizona beat SMU here. SMU came in undefeated. I think they were ranked fifth in the country.
Was this right before the scandal?
They were right before the scandal, so it was the height of their,
how
Mustangs, good they were.
Right.
And Arizona beat them here, kind of beat them bad, 28-7 or 28-10 or something like that, which was a great, exciting game because that was one of those games where, a lot of times that didn't happen.
Do you remember Arizona beating Oregon Musgrave at the end zone?
Right.
Darryl Lewis, I think he was the guy.
I was in the seats for that one.
Oh, you
that
were
in
the
seats.
That
was my first year back as a fan, but that play was right in front of where I sat. I sat on that goal line, Section 18. We still call our group Section 18, even though we sit in Section 24 now.
Uh-huh.
But that was right in front of us. We lost our minds, and that was an incredible game, but I was a fan for that one.
I was covering the team. I was right in front of it, and that was the first time, probably the last time, my whole body felt like, holy moly.
Yeah.
Because you stopped him at the 1-inch line or whatever
it
was.
Right.
And you hear the crash and you hear the thing and you're like, your body just goes like, holy moly, that was unbelievable.
Well, earlier in the year, and that was that great year that Darrell Lewis had, and he won the Jim Thorpe Award. But with the game at UCLA where Lewis picked off a pass and ran it back for a touchdown to win the game, that was my bachelor party. A whole group.
Oh, you watched? You went there?
A group of guys together, and we rented a motorhome, and we went on my bachelor party, and we went to that game, and that was the first leg of my bachelor party. We had a great time at that game, and you know, again, that one was right in front of us.
The rest of the legs of the bachelor party.
Let's just say we went to Las Vegas after the game
in the van,
in the same motorhome. That's all I'll say. I won't. Everything else, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. But it was a great time, and you know what? I still got married the next week, so there you go. But actually, it was a couple of weeks later. But that was my first year back as a fan, the 1990 season.
It's totally different. I mean, you must have been in heaven, because it's difficult. And I have I'm not a U of A grad. I have no skin in the game. I've never kind of been a fan except for, you know, stuff that goes well for my books or whatever. But you have a different perspective, because it's tough to be a fan and write about it.
Right.
Because you can't be.
You can't be. And you know, honestly, for those 2 years, well, actually it was 3 years, because I the 87 season, I actually stepped in for Jack Magruder, who was on another assignment, and covered a bunch of the games in the 87 season. I went to UCLA, and you know, and that, what was cool about that is I got to, you know, cover games with Troy Aikman and Rodney Peete and all that stuff. I went to Oklahoma and all that. But I really stopped being a fan, and I got a chance to cover the team, and I really just, like I've said before, I mean, the inside of me, I was hoping that they won, but for a different reason, because it was a easier story to write,
funner story to write.
The coaches and the players were in a better mood. It was an easier assignment if they won the games.
And,
you know, there was a couple of heartbreakers during those. There was one at Cal, the game in 1989, where George Malulu blew out his knee at the end of the game, and they blew a big lead.
I remember, I was there.
And all that and stuff like that. That was really hard to see. But you know, those games, that period of time for me was a blur. I mean, I remember covering the games, and as they come up, and you know, we'll talk about this with Doug Pfaff tomorrow. You know, in back-to-back games in the 89 season, he had game-winning kicks against ranked teams. I forgot about the second one against Washington, because I always remember the Oklahoma game. Well, he did it again the very next week when Washington came to town, and we'll talk about that with him.
I remember the Oklahoma game. It was like played between the 40s. No one moved the ball. You were lucky. It was late into the night.
Right.
But it was Oklahoma.
It was Oklahoma, and I remember walking into I had to go to the Oklahoma locker room after the, so I got some quotes, went to the Arizona locker room, went to the Oklahoma locker room, and as I'm walking in, two Oklahoma writers are walking out, and I heard one of them say, "He's trying to sell that Arizona is a great team, and I'm not buying it." And actually,
which is probably true.
They turned out to not be a great team. They went 7-4 that year, but you know, because they had lost that horrible game at Texas Tech the week before. So the guy had good reason to say that.
Sure. I remember that Texas Day game too. Remember we went to the steakhouse?
Yep, we went to that steakhouse. I had one of the greatest steaks I ever had there.
Right.
And then we all had to get in the car and leave the county line to go get some beer.
Right. 1988. Yeah.
No, 1989.
1989. James Gray, he ran for like 1,000 yards.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. That. But again, you know, it was a great time for me, and those games were a lot of fun, and that was where I got to know Dick Tomey, who became a lifelong friend. And you really got to, again, as we've said, you know, the access that you had, you got to know the coaches, you got to know the players, and you really got to meet, you know, with these guys. I remember, I needed to talk to Dana Wells after a practice, and you know, he later won that Best Lineman Award for the Pac-10.
One of those things, like that. Yeah,
and, well, the Pac-12. I needed to talk to him after practice, and they
pulled him aside for you,
and they pulled him aside for me, and then I, you know, he needed to get back to McHale, so he jumped in my car. car. Yeah, and I took him, because I was parked by the practice field, and we drove him in my car to McHale.
Those are really the truly the good old days. That doesn't happen anymore.
It does. It does. You can barely get near these guys. But you know what? Hey, the guys out there, they, you know, they're Michael Lev and those guys, Justin Spears, who do that stuff, they still do a lot of great work. And
every day?
Every day, and they bring it to us. So
know how they do
we need to appreciate how much harder it is.
Yes, yes. Hey, good show today. Thank you, Jay. We'll be back with Doug Pfaff.
We'll be back with Doug Pfaff from the 88-89 seasons.